Hey everyone, Grav here. Just before this episode starts, I want to make a small disclaimer right up top. We mention a few times in this episode that you can go and listen to our actual play of Megan GMing her first ever game of Magic and Mischief, but it turns out that the audio for that was corrupted and isn't salvageable. So just ignore when we say, hey, go listen to the actual play, because, well, it doesn't exist. We apologize for that, and we're going to try and record a second session of it soon for your listening pleasure. So, with that said, enjoy the episode! Cool. So, guys, how's your week going?
It's good. It's pretty good. Monday.
Yeah.
So,
it just started.
We got your, you talked to an insurance agent today.
I did. Yeah, I got rear-ended in my car, so I had to give them all of my information again today, which was fun. Now I'm going to find out if, you know, my car gets totally totaled or if I get to keep it or what.
Was it that bad?
It didn't feel like it was that bad, but because my car is old and has over 90,000 miles on it, there's a good chance that they'll just be like, nope, we're not going to pay for that.
Wow.
Yeah, like
you just
got
to buy a new piece of crap car.
I mean, that's sometimes accidents can work in your favor that way, if it does, like if they pay you out for it or something.
Yeah.
I definitely had a friend who had bought like a really nice car because he had a really nice job. And then I was in his car and we got in a car accident, like a big car accident.
Oh.
And like it turned out to be, he had to take it to court because they were like, no, it was your fault. It's like, no, we got rear-ended and spun into a different lane. Like, there's no way that's our fault.
Oh yeah.
My God.
And he won that and got paid out for the car. So it actually worked out in his favor, even though it's a traumatic experience in my life.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, yeah. No, that sounds awful.
Yeah.
That does sound awful.
No, the crappy thing about mine is, like, it's an old car, but it's in really good shape. Like, it was, I had like, no problems with it whatsoever. So I'm going to be super bummed if they're like, nope, we're not going to fix that. Buy a 93 Camry.
No! Yeah.
Those last forever.
Buy a brand new 93 Camry.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. What else this week? Wait, you were Harry Potter?
I was this weekend for our weekend job. I don't know if we've talked about that at all, but Megan and I dress up as various different characters and do sword fighting, kids' parties, and corporate events and stuff on the weekend. So we do like Star Wars. I do Power Rangers and Harry Potter and Spider-Man and a bunch of stuff like that.
And I've got Star Wars and superheroes and I don't even, Harry Potter as well. Actually, and I think I already told you this, maybe all of you this, but I had a Wonder Woman, a superhero party this weekend and at this really nice house in Malibu. And one little girl, just out of the blue, looked up at me and she goes, I'm gluten-free! So, yeah. I was like, oh, good!
Cool!
Learned to brag about that early. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She's maybe 5.
How about you, Dom? What's been up with you this week? How's your week been? Dom Zook, special guest.
Oh, why are you talking to me this early into the show? This is my first week as a Freeman.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I quit my job last week. I quit it like 3 weeks ago, but started my unemployment tenure Wednesday of last week, and this is my first week trying to do things all on my own, and that's fun and exciting.
It sounds like you're excited about it.
Doesn't it?
It sounds like something that you're very excited
about.
What
our listeners at home can't see is just the look of pure joy on my face right now.
We can't see it either, which is fun. Yeah. It's it's a secret Easter egg that only Dom's beard knows about.
Yeah. But other than that, not a whole lot. Just my roommate got a dog, which is going to be coming home, I think, tomorrow.
Ooh.
Is it a greyhound?
It is not.
It's not a greyhound.
It is a pug.
What? Mm-hmm. That is like the complete opposite of a greyhound.
Yeah. Right?
Well, a pug, my roommate has wanted a pug since forever. And that's what I thought she was going to be getting initially. And then as you know, pugs don't often come up very frequently
because everyone loves pugs.
Everyone loves pugs, and
because they can't breathe. I think that's
them. It's kind of sick. Yeah.
So she was looking all over the place, and a bunch of different dogs popped up, and then she was thinking about greyhounds, and we were looking at greyhounds, and of course it's a pretty intense process with greyhounds, and we have not a huge apartment, and they need a yard and stuff like that. So then the pug just magically appeared in a shelter, and no one had claimed it yet. So
no one knew how it got there or where it was from.
Where is this pug?
So basically, what you're saying is, instead of getting a miniature horse, you got the equivalent of someone sculpting a dog out of Play-Doh and then throwing it onto the ground, and it got all smashed up.
What?
I'm sorry, what?
I'm just trying to, like, succinctly summarize this whole dog experience, and I feel like I pretty much nailed it.
Uh-huh.
Definitely send your comments in.
Send us your dogs. Mail us your dogs.
Yeah. Let us know what you think of George's story.
With a dog. Send us a large dog if you approve of the story, and a small dog if you disagree.
I'm looking for
that's
those.
Saving throw, P.O. box.
I'm looking for those dog gifts, actually, is what I'm looking
send
for.
Send us a cat if you're somewhere in the middle.
Cats!
Megan loves cats.
Nope, we have enough cats.
Speaking of cats, is this a good segue to talk about last night's game that we just played?
Well, no, because we got to intro the episode first.
But this is a segue.
Oh, are we segueing into doing the intro?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. How do I always misread these from you? Oh, I ruined every one of these for you.
Everyone. All right.
How is cats a segue into last night's?
I was getting to it. Now you've ruined it.
No, tell us. Pretend I didn't say anything.
The moment has passed.
No, pretend I didn't say it.
Just
give it a beat.
Intro.
And segue.
No, I forgot. I'd forgotten what it was.
Yeah. Did you forget, or was there no segue?
You didn't have one.
I would have rolled into one eventually.
Yeah. Speaking of cats.
Cats
have, how about Harry Potter?
Cats have tails, and we played in quite a magical tale last night.
Exactly.
All right. Let's do the intro. So, hey guys, welcome to Experience Pointers. We are a trio of RPG gamers, and we are going to discuss different aspects of GMing games and hopefully offer up some suggestions and ideas that you can bring into your own home games as well. We also are joined by a very special guest today who we'll get to, but I guess first we should introduce ourselves. So why don't we start? We'll start over here this time.
Hi, I am Megan Caves.
Okay, and I thought she was going to say more than that.
am I supposed to say?
I don't know. Not important. My name is Jordan Caves Callerman.
And I am Gaurav Galati.
And joining us today, we have our very first guest on Experience Pointers. Tell everybody who you are, Dom Zook.
You pretty much did half of it right there. This is Dom Zook. I am the co-creator and executive producer of Saving Throw Show. We are a RPG live stream and YouTube channel. We do a bunch of different things. You're probably relatively familiar if you know Experience Pointers. And yeah, I'm also on the Wild Cards show that Jordan and Megan are a part of, and Gaurav, actually.
At this point, yes. Yeah, this will come out after Gaurav has been announced as the new cast member, so yeah, that's true.
So we can say that.
Welcome, Gaurav.
Welcome. Yay! Welcome.
Thanks, guys.
So yeah, in a way, you're kind of our boss, Dom.
Yeah, and I don't approve of you using work hours to film or record this podcast.
Oh.
Okay, we'll just dock our pay for it.
Yeah.
You got it. Divide your pay by three.
Okay, no problem.
Fair.
Great.
So today's episode is actually going to be about Megan's first GMing experience. So last night, we recorded and ran her first ever time GMing a tabletop RPG.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons why Dom is here with us today is because he was also a player at that game, and we wanted to get his feedback on the session as well. But I think we wanted to start off by handing it over to Megan and just having her talk a little bit about what the experience was like and anything else that she wanted to share about the first time she ran a game. And then we'll all offer our feedback, because I know everyone is just anxiously waiting to hear what it is we have to say about what it was like playing in Megan's game.
Oh, okay, cool, yeah. So I guess I'll kind of start with how I prepared for it, which was kind of like, what am I doing? I don't know what to do. Jordan, help me, was a lot of what it boiled down to. And I definitely like spent some time talking to Jordan, kind of going, okay, well, I mean, how do I begin this process? In what way, you know, what information do I need to have? What information do I not need to plan, or I can't plan? And Jordan and I kind of, the game I ran was Magic and Mischief, which is a reskin of Lasers and Feelings, which I've never played Lasers and Feelings. I don't know anything about it. I just happened upon Magic and Mischief. But it's a very rules light system. So as Jordan said, the first thing to do is probably learn the system, which it's one page. So that's not too hard to do.
And we've linked that in our show notes before. So you guys, if you've listened to the show, you probably maybe heard us talk about Magic and Mischief or checked out the PDF.
And then we spend some time. So Magic and Mischief is not, it's like Harry Potter. It's not necessarily straight Harry Potter. It's you create your school, whatever. It's generic. But I decided, that was a decision Jordan and I kind of, well, Jordan helped me decide was, well, do I want to set it in the actual Harry Potter universe or do I want to make my own that just mirrors it? And instead I was like, no, I know Harry Potter and I enjoy that world. And as long as, for me, I don't set it in the current time period, I give myself the ability to... you know, really make it whatever I want, but I still get to utilize the pieces of the Harry Potter world that I want.
Just real quick before we get further into this, you keep mentioning that, like, you and I collaborated on this, but I just want everyone to know the actual experience of it was she asked me a couple questions, I gave her some answers, and then she started furiously scribbling in a notebook and told me to shut up. So she was like, no, I got it, you can stop. So I really did very little to help get the ball rolling with this.
Yeah, I mean, he's right, I suppose, in some ways, but at first it was kind of like, okay, I need you to help me with this. And then I sort of had a basic idea. And Jordan, actually, you talked about, and I don't remember entirely what it was called, but it was the five-room
dungeon, which is a really cool adventure design system that we should probably talk about in a future episode, but we won't necessarily go into here.
But he did, and we can link to that maybe in the show notes too, but he did sort of mention that, which is just the idea of, you know, giving yourself sort of an obstacle, at least the way you explained it, like different obstacles for the players to come into. And I sort of had that idea in my head. And I was also doing a one shot that I really didn't want to go. I didn't want it to be too long. So, and the experience of being a player and watching all of my GMs either do one shots or an ongoing game, I have learned that you really don't need to plan too much. Otherwise, your game will go on for hours and hours and hours and hours. Because generally speaking, you know, like... players like to play in certain areas and they'll spend some time there. So yeah, and I feel like I was lucky this time around that an idea came into my head because we started talking about, well, actually on Magic and Mischief, it has you, there's a table, and I talked about this in the actual play, but there's a table in which you can roll sort of your basic storyline. So it's like you roll to find out, I don't have it in front of me, but it's like you roll to find out who your... like what main thing is happening, like someone is trying to steal something and it's like a table, it's like a rival school is trying to steal something and they're doing it because of this and this is what they hope to gain. And and then also your school is supposed to have like two negative things and two or three positive aspects. And so I actually took those suggestions, which was an extensive library and lots of tunnels, and it had a dark past. And those things kind of jumped into my head, and I created this future world of Harry Potter. And then I was like, oh, this... the idea of the library that is magically expanded to fit all these extra books and it moves around got into my head. And then I was like, I should add science in here because that's weird for Harry Potter. And I don't know. The idea just popped in and yeah.
Preparation. And that's around the time you told me to shut up and started scribbling in your notebook.
Right. And then I realized I needed a basic framework for like, okay, I need them to go here and they're going to need this information to get to that. But it definitely felt like, and actually Jordan and I were talking about this, the library, I had to figure out a way for you guys to get back out of it. I knew I wanted to do a beetle for you to follow to get into it, but to get back out of it, I was like, oh crap, what can they do? And I was like, well, maybe I could have a magical beast. Okay, so the library has magical beasts. Like I just kind of did that backwards, I guess. But as Jordan was saying, it doesn't feel that way to you guys necessarily. But in my mind, I'm like, I cheated. So anyway, that's sort of what the preparation was. And I found a cool mythical beast generator that I really liked.
Super cool.
It's cool. We'll link to that. And then I found a Harry Potter name generator, which was good. So I named my PCs. And I actually my NPCs. And I gave them all one weakness just in case. Because I was I don't know what... if they ask me a question, I need to have something ready to go. And that was helpful for me. But yeah, other than that, I didn't really feel like I did a lot, which made me nervous. but yeah, before the game, I was definitely really nervous. And even during the game, I just had a lot of like fidgety anxiety. And I I thought I would do okay. I have this skill. I have the skill of essentially improv, of being able to respond, but sometimes if I get too nervous, my brain shuts down. So I was a little nervous about that. For the most part, I don't think that it did, but I definitely had some moments where I was like, this, like the EMP thing that your character Dom found, I was like, I don't know, EMP, that's a thing you can find. So there were some things like that, but I also didn't necessarily feel like my NPCs were very distinct. So I was a little worried about confusion. I was also worried that I didn't give enough information in any given area for you guys to know where to go or to have a direction. As I've played with some GMs before where they don't really give you anything and you kind of feel like you're floundering, which is not a lot of fun. And then there were also some times where I worried that I took over too much control. But I forgave myself a lot of that. This is my first time, which is fine. But yeah, that's pretty much how I felt going into the game and during the game. And those were some of the challenges. Oh, one challenge that kind of blew my mind. I wanted to do accents for my characters. They went. I would start with one, and then it would go out the window. And I was like, where did the accent go? Why can't I find it again? Which, you know, I've struggled with as a PC too, but not like that. Like, usually I can find it again.
Well, you typically only have to do just one voice as a PC, but when you're GMing, like, especially if you want to give yourself the added challenge of doing, like, accents and dialects, you have to do a lot of different voices, which is a whole other challenge.
Right. But yeah, so that was an interesting discovery. But it was kind of funny. Jordan and I were talking about it a little bit afterwards, and I was like, GMing feels like I've put a box in front of you, and you guys are a bunch of monkeys trying to destroy the box, but you don't know that's what you're doing. I'm going, okay, hold on, I gotta keep the box together while they, yep, you're good, I'm keeping the box together.
I know, I really enjoyed that analogy, actually.
Yeah, that's pretty great.
So, and it's funny, too, because as a player, and I think I mentioned this before, I just have this idea in mind that the GM is just relaying this actual world to me, not that the GM is birthing this, really. Mm-hmm. And it's weird to be on the other side, because I was like, it just seemed like loosey-goosey insanity. I feel like I'm just, like, barely holding on, like, yep, they haven't seen through this yet, so... It was very interesting to see the other side, for sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was a really good overview of your experience as GM. So I think since all of us were players in the game, does anyone have anything like that you want to ask Megan about the experience of doing that, or any like observations or questions or comments that you had that just came up when you were playing? Does anybody want to get the ball rolling with that?
Well, I think we were going to talk about this anyways, but maybe we should get your thoughts about this first, is what you thought about the system itself.
The system was actually a little frustrating. And I felt like in the play of it, I either was approaching it from a Dungeons & Dragons or even Savage Worlds sort of, not background, but just I was approaching it the way I would approach those games. Because I did run into an instance in which Dom, your character, fell into some books in the library, and I was like, oh, great opportunity for him to find this bug that was going to be a big part of the game. And I was like, how do I do a notice roll? How does that work? Because in the system, you're basically either rolling magic or mischief, and those two things sort of govern other aspects, mischief being like thought and deception, things like that, and magic being more like passionate, immediate action, which is great. But I didn't know as a GM how to have you roll something that you didn't necessarily know what you were rolling for. Now, maybe that's just that I needed to approach it differently. I don't know. And maybe it could get better. The other thing that I had a really hard time with is, generally speaking, everyone just rolls one die. But if you are trying to get successes on multiple dies, you have another die if you are prepared or if you have knowledge or something. So you might be rolling two dice or more. But what I didn't get is, if you're just basic knowledge and you roll one die, if you only succeed on one die, you don't fully succeed. And that seems like too much of a hindrance for just a normal person, if that makes sense. I almost feel like the basic... system or the basic mechanics should be that everyone rolls two die. Because one thing I didn't get into is you can actually take damage, but it's more like, oh, you're hurt, so you're rolling one less die for this. And that makes more sense to me, because that's that's giving you, like, you're never going to fully succeed at it in that way unless somebody helps you. Mm-hmm. Because you can, another friend or player can add another die if they successfully help you.
You did have a lot of ideas for how to homebrew and fine tune the system on the way home, which I thought was cool. Because, yeah, it definitely did. There were some interesting hangups in that system, because for being so wide open, mm-hmm. it kind of felt bizarrely limiting in a way mm-hmm. to only have magic and mischief. Like, it took us forever to, like, even start casting spells, because, like, it just didn't feel like it was like, oh, I know I can do a lot of things, but I can also only do magic or mischief. So yeah. I was like, there was a bunch it of things limiting. I was like, I don't know how to even try this, so yeah. I won't.
Yeah. Well, and the questions were such a cool idea that if you landed on your number, you got to ask a question, get more insight, and then roll again. But sometimes the roles were not something that you really had yeah. a question for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So that was, I don't know. Jordan and I, yeah, had some different ideas on, like, how to change it. The only thing, mechanic-wise, I don't know the statistics of any of that. But I still like it, the basic system. I think it's interesting. I like its tone, its feel. I kind of like the way the characters were built. It was more just for your own brain than it was a mechanics thing. But I do feel like there needs to either just be some more discussion or explanation of the different mechanics and how they work and when or what they encompass, and maybe just an adjustment on the way the dice works would be the biggest things to me.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to say, because you brought up that you didn't feel like your NPCs were very distinct. Mm-hmm. That was not my experience at all, actually. I felt like you had a really distinct, different energy for all of the different professors and students that we interacted with. Mm-hmm. And for me, at least, I had a really easy time seeing those as clearly distinct NPCs, which I know was one thing you were worried about, and mm-hmm. I didn't really feel like you had much need to worry about that at all. They worked out really well for me. I know, actually, from my point of view, probably knowing better than anyone here at the table what your anxieties were going into it, because we are married and talk about things outside of this podcast.
What?
I know. We have to.
No one on Saving Throw can have a relationship.
Oh.
All right. Okay. Take it out of our pay, Dom. I know that a lot of the things you were most worried about were the things I felt like you handled the best at the table.
Hmm.
I actually thought you were going to do fine. But I was really impressed by how well you handled it, mm-hmm. I thought. Because you were talking about your anxiety and your nervousness, and I didn't read any of that from you at the table, mm-hmm. and I know your tells better than anyone else, so that was pretty cool. You seemed very with it as a GM.
I think most of my tells were under the table with my legs doing this.
Well, I couldn't see that. I couldn't see that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you, whenever you were presented with a challenge, I felt like you had a strong enough grasp on what the story you were aiming for and what you had sort of set up, and also the system enough that you could formulate, even when you, like, that whole clumsy thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I literally fell just as a joke because that's what my character was. But you very appropriately seized on that to further tell the story. When I, you know, me or anyone, when questions would come up or, you know, we were asking questions, I never felt like you were just, I mean, even if you were, and everyone is doing this, but just making stuff up on the spot, it's like, it never felt like you had no idea and were just throwing an answer out. It always felt like you had, like, there was a basis for that in your plan. So, yeah, I don't know. I think probably the issues with the system, like you were talking about, you know, about how to do notice checks and stuff like things. I think because of your experience level playing RPGs, you probably have a more fine-tuned sense of what you're expecting out of a game, whereas Magic and Mischief is pretty, I mean, it's about as rules light as it can be.
Right.
Well, and still, yeah, there's
set of rules for shoes.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, and still kind of have some sort of cohesiveness to it. And
okay, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks.
Yeah. yeah, so I think you, the instincts that you had for making the game more complex were good in that you weren't, you never tried to make it over complex. You weren't like, roll for this, roll for this, roll for this. It's like, that wasn't the thing. It was like, the story was going, your players were having fun and like, just let it go. And I never felt like you were ever trying to control that situation in any, in any sort of manner.
Good. Cause I was worried about that for sure, that I would, cause I was like, oh crap, I gotta get them here. And if they don't go there, like, there was one point in which I introduced a desert in the library, mostly to just set up that that could happen. And then you guys almost went into the desert, like, oh crap, well, what do if they go in the desert?
That was cool. I think we understood that we probably shouldn't go there, but I thought that was such a cool change of scenery and very Harry Potter-esque.
Yeah.
We walk in a door, it's a completely different landscape.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then also going back to what Jordan said about your NPCs, I think they were very different and unique, and especially the first one that we met that was like a major one was the librarian, who was like very much like strict and be quiet. And then once someone rolled something to try to convince her to do something else, and they tied and they asked a question, you made it very real and very dark, but in a good way, because a lot of Harry Potter is like that.
Sure.
Like it's a storybook for children.
Were you talking about where she was like, the librarian, you know, is like really lonely. Yes. And yeah. Like doesn't have anyone to like talk to.
Yeah. She's very lonely and she likes this very specific kind of music. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to hang out with her, you just need to kind of show her that you're interested in that. Mm-hmm. And like, we're like, wow, yes, that's very real. That's, people are like that, you know, like, that's very cool. And that's Harry Potter is like that sometimes. There's, there's characters who are deeper than they look on your first look at them, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to actually talk about, you ran into two instances in the game that we sort of touched on in what Dom and Gaurav were saying that were, from my point of view, like challenges that a GM would often face and need to figure out. So the first one, when you were talking about how she didn't overcomplicate things with the roles, at one point one of the players, our friend Dennis, started taking more narrative control of the world. Like, you had Dom's character get this strange bite and we didn't see what bit him, and Dennis went, oh, that's a pixie bite. I know that's a pixie bite. And I was watching you for that and I was like, I don't think that's what it was, but I was waiting to see what you would do, like if you would make him roll for that or what. But you just kind of like let it go for a bit, and I could see you were like, oh, huh, how do I handle this? Because he was like, yeah, it's a pixie bite. So I had to keep fighting the impulse to try and help you as a player, because I was like, no, I gotta like just let it happen. So I was, but even in that point, I was like, are you sure it's a pixie bite? Like, maybe take another look at it. You didn't really get a good look.
And that's where you got, or it's a dragon bite.
Yeah, it's, like, it's definitely a pixie bite or a dragon bite. And then again, you were like, I don't know. And I was like, okay, I guess we're going with it's a pixie bite. But then eventually when he tried to once again float something about that, you did step in and go, well, why don't you roll to see if you have that information?
Well, that was definitely an instance where I was sitting there. I was like, oh, right. I have to make him roll for this. Where I went, oh, crap. And then, because that was sort of near early on, especially when you guys started doing that sort of stuff. And that actually was something I was worried about, too, is knowing when to have you guys roll. But then when we did it, and once I remembered that I was the GM and there was not going to be anyone else who would do that, then I went, okay.
But I think your instincts were good, because like Dom was saying, you being a new GM and not knowing when to make the characters roll, you erred on the side of not making us roll instead of making us roll for everything.
Right.
Which I think is in general a better tactic for keeping the game flowing and moving forward on the whole. It's going to depend on your table. Yeah. But yeah, that specific instance is a challenge in rules-like games, is you do have to, like, a lot of times rules-like games are about collaboratively taking ownership of the world. Mm-hmm. But that was one time when I was fairly certain that you knew that was not a pixie bite, but he was like, oh, no, it is. And you were like, okay.
I got the same sensation where I was like, this is not a pixie bite. I think we would have known that, and he would have known that. And when you weren't saying anything, you were saying stuff, right?
Sure.
Because what I was getting there was like, yes, he is the bookworm. Yes, he is very smart, but he can be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's whether you intended it or not, I think that your instinct was to not engage that necessarily, and to sort of let it happen, and then just let everyone believe, like, okay, yeah, it's either a pixie or a dragon bite. Like, my character's like, I think I got bit by a pixie or a dragon, I don't know, but my smart friend, you know, knows what all these things are, so I guess I'm gonna go with that. And you know, you're just like, well, we'll see. We'll sure, see, you, right? That's what you believe. And it's right. And it, you know, even when you get into something more crunchy like a like D&D or something, when you roll a perception or something, and you or you know, even more pointed is like a rogue searching for traps, mm-hmm. and generally the GM rolls and will not tell you if you fail or succeed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, okay, yeah, you check for traps. You don't see anything. Mm-hmm. It's like that could be yes or no, you
right.
know?
Right, right.
Yeah. And it's like that having like yes, there's a knowledge there that these players have, and whether you choose to do that, because you can give away if you're like roll for this, roll for this, roll for this. Mm. The more you do that, the more you're kind of telling your players that everything is a yes or a no. You sure. know what I mean? There's mm-hmm. there's no kind of gray area of maybe mm-hmm. you know.
Well, yeah, it was interesting though, because you erred on the side of trusting your players and seeing where it went instead yeah. of like immediately trying to lock down everything, which I yeah. thought was actually a really good basic instinct to have as a GM.
Well, it seems like trying to lock down everything would just be, I'd be making my job so much harder. I mean, if yeah. you guys,
yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, if you guys make, I mean, if you're making decisions and you're having fun with those decisions, it's, I mean, just like an improv or acting or anything like that, it's great to go, oh, you've given me a gift. I'm going to use it.
Right.
And it's way easier for me and way more fun. And actually, just sort of what you were talking about, I think, and I think you've mentioned this before too, Jordan, but jamming seems to really just be problem solving. It's almost like problem mm-hmm. solving, you know, like, okay, here's the thing they presented and I need to get them here. So how do I, you know, make this work so that that happens and everybody's happy or what, you know, whatever your goal is.
And then another thing, like Rob was talking about that door in the desert, and you were saying you were really worried we were going to take it. I thought that was a really interesting exercise in seeing things from the GM's perspective versus the player's perspective. Mm-hmm. Because what happened in that instance is we had been walking through this library and every room we went into was the same. It had all these open doorways, everything was moving around, but every room looked like all the other rooms. And then we went into this one room where every door was open except for one which was closed. And you very pointedly pointed out to us that one door was closed. Mm-hmm. So we looked through all the open doors and they all went into rooms that looked the same. And then we opened this one door and it was like, this is a desert landscape with these weird creatures in it. So it was like, oh, okay, this is the only different thing that we've encountered, so yeah. we probably right. need to do something with this.
Right.
And even though, like, I was pretty sure we weren't supposed to go into the desert, I feel like yeah. everyone else yeah. at the table sort of got that impression.
I tried to use the creatures to keep you guys from going.
Right. But that's an instance where, as a GM, you have to kind of train yourself to sort of see things from the player's point of view. So, like, just basic problem-solving-wise, from what we're used to playing games like video games or tabletop games in general, it's like, okay, this thing breaks the pattern, so it must be important in mm-hmm. some way. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an interesting challenge that you yeah. sort of stumbled on. It's like, oh, crap, I accidentally made something non-essential seem essential,
right.
which happens all the time to you as right. a GM. Yeah. You're like, whoops, I described this vase too much, yeah. and now they think it's magic. Yeah. I just thought it yeah. would be cool to have a nice vase in this room, but... Yeah. Whoops! Now they're gonna try and protect it from with their lives.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was funny fumbling around those library rooms as a player because we went through like five or six of them and we were like, man, nothing's changing. And all we were doing was looking at through the doors.
Mm.
And she's like, "What are you guys look around the rooms?" We're like, "Oh right, this is an RPG. We can do whatever we want.
Right.
We can look at other stuff."
Yeah,
I don't know why that didn't catch on to us, but we just did not focus. But on
again,
it.
I think that was an interesting hang up of the game system. Like for yeah. whatever reason, all of us felt like I felt more limited in that rules light system mm-hmm. than I had in like a game system in a while. And I think it took us the bulk of the session to figure out how to use the system in a way that made sense to us.
Well, and see, I wasn't sure if that was me, like if I was like, crap, I just didn't give them enough information to think to search or there was a lot of that I was like, is this my fault?
No, I mean, the way for me at least that it was a sort of a system limitation and player limitation as well, but in the system, like, I was thinking, I either got to do some magic or I got to do some mischief.
Right.
I didn't right. think, like, I got to look for things. That didn't really occur to me. It was mm-hmm. just like, I got to do something big here or big here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way that it was, things were coming across to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to do big actions. And that's, you know, I'm just going to keep moving through these doors. But, oh, yeah, yeah, we could totally investigate. We could totally do whatever, mm-hmm. Ask questions and stuff. And those were the things that didn't occur to me, and I don't think that was you or anything. It was just more.
That makes sense now, thinking about it and talking to you guys just in that. But I did, during the game, I was like, oh no, I worried about that. But there was one other thing that just came to my mind. So whenever you all were in the science lab area and you were trying to find a fireplace to go back, I think I mentioned this last night, but you were all like, well, we'll all search the different rooms, and everyone succeeded. And I was like, oh crap, I guess everyone found a fireplace.
Because
I was like, how do you, if everyone succeeded, then there were a couple of instances, and I think it was your character who wanted to look for more flu powder.
Yeah.
And then I was like, I can't have him do that, because if he succeeds, then he has to find it, but this is a non-magical place.
Well, yeah, I guess so. I guess you could have, you could have determined each success a different way.
Right. And that's sort of, Jordan and I talked about that, and he was like, oh, just because it's a success doesn't mean they have to find what they were looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I went, oh, that was one thing that I did not think about.
In that particular instance, but I actually think there are other instances in the game where you handled and adjudicated that really well.
Well, I didn't think about it in that way.
Sure. But some of it's like just letting things click into place, too. Sure. Another thing you did that I thought was really good, and that was like a really good GM move, which we sort of talked about off stream. So at one point you told us that the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor was guarding the library.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone knew, like, we couldn't get into the library because it was being guarded by a professor. So... I think it was Dom had the idea to use flu powder, or was that you? Someone had the idea to use flu powder.
I think it was you.
Was it?
I think it was Dom.
Dennis.
Might have been Dennis, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of D names at the table last
night. Yeah, DeAndre, Dennis, Dom. Jordan.
Jordan and Durav.
Dagan.
But, yeah, anyways, one of the players at the table had the idea to use flu powder, which had not occurred to you, but was a totally, viable in-game thing, and you were like, oh crap, I wanted the Defense Against the Dark Arts professor to be an obstacle, and they're just gonna go right by him in a fireplace. So what you did that was so great, knowing this after the fact, was you never told us explicitly he was guarding the door to the library.
Right.
You just told us he was guarding the library.
Right.
So when we went in through the library fireplace, you had him in the library, like just kind of like hanging out, keeping an eye on things.
Mm-hmm.
So we still had to deal with him as an obstacle, which was a really good instinctual move to make, because we found a way around an obstacle the way you had seen it in your head, but the way you described it to us was different. You just told us he was guarding the library. So putting him in the library and still having him be an obstacle we had to overcome was a totally, like, viable and like, world... I don't know what the term I'm looking for is. Like, it made sense. It still made sense. No one was like, oh, I thought we were going to get around that guy. Like, it was like, oh, crap, he's in the library.
Yeah, sure.
That's
cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But, like, that's the kind of stuff you have to be able to do as a GM, because your players will outthink you.
Right.
All the time. Like, like you said, us monkeys are going to destroy that box.
Right.
But if you can, like, just shore up a different end of it, you can keep it, like, the basic shape of it and still challenge us in a way. So, like, I thought that was a really good move on your part.
Yeah, it was also interesting trying to, and you've talked about, I think any GM I've talked to has talked about this, but trying to keep everything in my head at the same time.
Yeah.
Because when you guys got to the science lab and you met the scientist, and I was like, she's on her phone, and I was like, oh crap, future in her head. And there was like I was trying to be like future tech, just kind of on the fly.
Boop boop, boop on boop, my hand. Boop, boop.
Yeah. So there was it was just. I don't know. It was funny in my mind, just all of those things that I'm definitely very overly self-critical. So in my mind, I'm like, oh God, they saw that was horrible. And they're like, you're just barely hanging on, aren't you? But I also know that that's not necessarily how I come across to other people. But it was interesting because I did mention that specific thing to Jordan last night. And he was like, oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
It seemed like you meant her to be on a hand phone the whole time. Like never noticed. There was no pause there.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
So... having seen how the sausage is made as a GM, does that kind of take away the, like, is it sort of like knowing how a magic trick is done? Does it sort of like kind of lift the curtain and take away some of the mysticism of playing a tabletop RPG?
I don't know if it takes away the mysticism, because I have a sneaking suspicion that I will go back as a player and just think the exact same way I did before, even though I know the difference. It's just one of those things that my brain does.
Sure.
Unless I continue to GM enough and to where that becomes more consistent for me as well. But yeah, I mean, there's definitely... what I think it might do, though, is serve me in... making decisions as a player, in that I know I don't know, this kind of sounds awful, but almost like, oh, I can poke a hole in that. And not that that's what I want to do, but I just sort of feel like I maybe understand the GM and what it is he's doing and the way I respond and how that affects the GM in a different way than I did before.
And I don't think you need to be malicious about it.
No, and I don't want to be.
I think every now and then it can be good for the players to sort of poke a hole in what the GM is doing, you know? Like, yeah. I think it's easy for GMs to get into a rut and be like, well, they're just going to do this because they know I expect them to. And every now and then to be like, okay, but I don't know that we really have a motivation to do that. Like, that's a good thing to do. Like, sure. To like, just kind of keep your GMs, you know, all oiled up and
wow. Awesome. I don't know.
Not the best term.
No, that went weird.
Okay.
Monkey boxes. I like that one.
Okay. And then I guess most important question. Did you have fun running the game? Did you enjoy it?
I did.
It looked like you did.
I did.
I laughed a lot last night.
We got especially towards the end, we were almost just constantly giggling about something.
We were. It was crazy. Yeah, I did have fun. I mean, definitely had fun with the group. It was hard to tell if I was just having fun with the group or having fun as a GM. But I will say one thing that was kind of nice for me, because I tend to, especially if there are other loud people in the room, I just tend to fade away because I just, for whatever reason, I just do. And as a GM, you got your dedicated spotlight, and mm-hmm. it's kind of cool because it's just like something everyone has agreed upon, and I felt like I got the opportunity to play in a way that I don't always feel like I do as a player, and I really enjoyed that, because not only was it because I was in the GM chair, but it's also because I got to be different characters. And while that is intimidating, it's also cool because as a player, generally speaking, you're just the one character, and it might be a cool character, but that's it. You know, that's who you're playing with. But as a GM, it's like, oh, I can throw this in, I can throw that in, and I'm going to do this silly, ridiculous thing. And it's going so fast that you almost don't have time to overthink it, which is great for me. So I did enjoy that aspect of it, just in interaction and playfulness, because I felt like I got to play in a different way. As far as doing it consistently, the preparation part is so stressful for me. And it was one thing to create a one-shot story, but to thinking about trying to continue a story seems difficult.
You say that, but you actually planted the seeds for several future plot hooks and plot points in that one shot.
Completely unintentional.
Right, but like I thought the story was interesting, and the things that you set up, like we solved one problem, but there were so many more unanswered mm-hmm. questions that would have been ripe for like future exploration, mm-hmm. that I thought you just kind of naturally put in there. Well, I guess we should sort of wrap up this discussion so we can move on to our question of the sode. But I thought you did a really good job, Megan. I had a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
Good. Thank you. I had a lot of fun too, and I had fun running a game for you guys. So it was a really good first GM experience.
Great.
Well, yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, way more important question though. Who's your favorite player at the table?
Uh-oh.
Here we go.
I don't know. I kind of liked the, you know, Hufflepuff group as a whole. Mm-hmm. I think honestly more than favorite player though, I just liked the ridiculous interplay you guys had. That was almost a player in its own.
I know we spent way more time in what you expected to just be the expository like prologue of your game than you expect
so
us to.
So much time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That one guy who was like, guys, this is a class is starting, you guys coming? We're like,
we're not
having a lot of fun here.
We're gonna keep making fun of each other.
Oh yeah. No, that was fun. It's also cool to see how you guys play in the world that I created. Yeah. You know, and what you play with. It's interesting.
Yep. All right. Cool. So let's talk about this week's question of the sode. Oh, yeah, we all say that at the same time now. We decided. Sorry about that,
just
Dom.
Just now, we just decided that.
But Dom, as our guest, feel free to chime in on this question as well.
Mm-hmm. You got it.
So this comes from the D&D subreddit, and it is from user, I think it's your boy LJ, or it's your boy lowercase LJ, but probably not. So his question is how to get PCs to care about side quests. Mm. He says, I love the group I DM for. We are all quite new, but we have a good time. We finished a small campaign a couple weeks ago and just started a new one last night. In this particular case, they were guests at a monastery for a couple days before I was going to have any sort of combat happen. I thought this would make them become more interested in non-combat encounters, but all they wanted to do was wait around until something cool happened. No one explored or talked to other NPCs, just a lot of reading or sleeping or training, and they didn't really get engaged until something cool happened. What are some things that other DMs do that are interesting side quests or non-combat things that are still interesting to the player?
Well, I guess, okay, not having GM'd a game like D&D, I mean, I've played in it, but what exactly is the purpose of a side quest, I suppose? If you have a main storyline, why would you want a side quest that doesn't go along with that?
Well, okay, so first of all, I think a side quest by nature does not have to be completely divorced from the main quest.
Okay, okay.
So think about it. I really like thinking about an RPG campaign like a season of a TV show.
Right.
So most TV shows that are episodic will have like an overarching plot for a season. Mm-hmm. And then they'll have several episodes that are maybe dealing with individual problems, and maybe sometimes those link to the larger meta plot, or maybe they are just standalone things. So the benefit of a side quest can be finding a way to tie it into the larger meta plot,
mm-hmm.
or just having sort of like a palate cleansing, like we're going to do like a fun extra thing to get away from the meta plot for a little bit and then come back to it with fresh eyes.
Yeah, it's a good way to change like the tone of maybe if a main quest is super dreary, you can do this sure. one fun one-off to kind of like lighten their moods a little more.
Yeah, okay. Like think of those episodes of The X-Files that were like the comedic ones. Mm-hmm. Like right. side quests can, like those are some of my favorite episodes of TV shows mm-hmm. like that. And side quests can kind of serve that same purpose, like you were saying, Garof.
Well, yeah. I think that's funny because I guess where I'm approaching it is looking at it like a TV show. And actually, while I of course loved The X-Files, now especially, I don't like that. I want to stay on my myth arc. I don't want Monster of the Week. So that's the only reason I'm asking is what the reason. But that makes perfect sense. So you'd want to change the mood or mm-hmm. or and Jordan, you I think you do this on wild cards a lot. I just don't think of it like that because it always feels like whatever we do on an episode is somehow going to tie in to the overarching.
It does feel like that, doesn't it?
Oh,
but in okay. reality, from week to week, I go, okay, I want to have them do something different this week, and then I'll just find a way to tie that into what's going on.
Sure.
So I think a great way to get your PCs involved in side quests is to bring the adventure to them. Mm-hmm. So if they're just hanging out in this monastery, not really doing something, like have some like shady monk like come up and start asking them like weird questions about stuff. And they'll be like, what is this guy's deal? Mm-hmm. And then they might be interested enough in like this way that you sort of like hooked them into the world of this monastery to kind of explore that.
Yeah.
What do you think, Tom, as someone who has both played and run RPGs?
Yeah, I think I think it obviously it depends on your players and what their characters are.
Yeah.
And what they're aiming for with those characters. You can always try to hook them if they have some sort of backstory or some fears or whatever. Mm. You can always try to tackle one of those and get them hooked that way. Some players are, like you were saying in the question, that they are just looking for the next combat. So, you know, it could be something where they have to do a trial by, you know, combat before they get to the next combat or something like that. Mm. But I think it's about the hook and how you present that hook to the players, because you can just have a guy going like, hey, all of us monks are going to dinner. You guys want to come?
Welcome to Chili's?
Yeah, welcome to Chili's.
Our monastery has a Chili's.
Yeah. or it can be like Jordan said, you know, this mysterious monk, you know, dressed differently than the others comes and visits you. And it's all really how you present it, because the more you present it like it's a hook, the more the players are going to recognize it as a hook, which seems counterproductive. Like, you kind of want them to be exploring and everything on their own, but if your players are not doing that, then you're going to have to give them a little bit of a nudge in a direction to get them to go that way.
Yeah, I mean, if you want them to explore, then chances are you have things you want them to find. And if they're not looking for them, then bring some of that stuff to yeah. them and then get them pulled out of their rooms and started
yeah.
on the exploration process. And just like Dom said, that can be related to something that the characters are specifically going after, or you can hook them based on what you know your players enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a couple yeah. players who cannot resist a mystery, then give them something mysterious that happens. If you've got a player who loves social interaction, give them this like like really hard-nosed person who cannot be won over to like helping them out, and like then that player will be like, okay, well I can talk this guy into helping us.
Right.
You know, like it comes with knowing your players as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that
sometimes
makes sense.
They just need that piece of candy. That mm-hmm. one little piece of candy leads to another to get mm-hmm. to the big candy.
Ooh,
at the
candy.
Center. Mm, piece of candy.
Mm-hmm. Piece of candy.
Pizza candy.
Pizza candy. Mm-hmm.
Cool. If your players like pizza candy, they are objectively wrong, but throw them a piece of it, you know? Like, that's what they want.
Piece of pizza candy.
Piece of pizza candy.
Isn't pizza candy just pepperoni, though?
Piece of pizza candy.
Well, I mean, that's depending on how you look at it. I mean, mm-hmm. pizza candy could be pizza-flavored candy.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Could be like pizza-shaped candy.
Like those gummy pizzas.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah. I don't know why you went pepperoni as pizza candy.
Because it's the candy you put on pizza to make it better.
Wow. Do you put candy on things to make things better? Is that...
Yeah, like ice cream you put sprinkles on. That's like putting candy to make something better.
You need to make ice cream better with sprinkles.
I like sprinkles.
So you're saying... Well, I have no response to that. You are entitled to your opinion.
Some people like turtles. Gaurav likes sprinkles.
He does.
I like sprinkles.
I like sprinkles.
I did not say it like that.
Well, let's did go back you? To the tape.
You kind of did in our minds.
Yeah.
You did.
So does that... I think we addressed that question of the episode fairly well.
I think so.
Should we wrap some things up and tell people where they can find us? And then maybe... why don't we start with Dom? Dom, yeah. Tell our listeners where they can find you. And then maybe take a second to talk about Saving Throw and the kind of things they can find on Saving Throw.
Thank you so much for asking, Jordan. That got weird fast. Yeah, you can... You can find me at Gadzook, GADZOOK, on Twitter, and otherwise at Saving Throw Show everywhere else. And Saving Throw is something, you know, I co-created it with Ben Dunn and Tyler Rhodes about 4 years ago now. And it was designed to be a show that not only taught but also entertained and was inclusive as much as possible. And one of my overarching goals for Saving Throw is to show the inclusivity of gaming, and that the worlds of fantasy and science fiction and all of that sort of fun stuff are open to anyone. So it's really, really, it's masked by the fun, I think, that we have. But I have a more serious, I guess, goal in mind with the whole channel. But it initially started as a tutorial for Pathfinder and then grew into this whole live streaming Twitch channel. So, that's that. So you can watch our shows 6 days a week.
Hmm. On Twitch, right?
On Twitch.
Yeah, that's where they can find us. And then, Megan, where can everybody find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Megan Caves. That's MEGHANCAVES. You can see me on the Saving Throw Show Wild Cards on Fridays at 8 p.m., which seemingly you can really find all of us there. But that is our our Savage Worlds Deadlands Reloaded, so sort of Wild West horror RPG that we play. And it's a good time. It's a good time. And Jordan and I also do couples therapy, or right now it's the Halloween Spookaganza, in which we play video games at 4 p.m. on Saving Throw. And right now we're playing Until Dawn, which is a creepy slasher style video game.
And that's 4 p.m. on Mondays. All times Pacific.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My name is Jordan Capes Callerman. You can find me on Twitter at Jordan Callerman. That's CALLARMAN. And you can also find me, I'm the GM of Wild Cards on Friday nights at 8 p.m. It is a lot of fun. We would love to have you. If you haven't checked us out yet, it's a great show. I have a really good cast of players and we have a lot of fun. So I think you'd enjoy it. Stop on by sometime.
I'm Grav Galati. You can find me on Twitter at DoubleGXG. That's the word double, not two G's. You can also follow me on Twitch, which is twitch.tv/DoubleGXG. You can catch me on Saving Throw as well. I'm on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. playing D&D 5th Edition on a show called Iron Keep Chronicles. It's a lot of fun. It's amazing. And then I'm also going to start, starting this week, I'm going to be on Wild Cards, also at 8 p.m.
And that's not the week that this podcast is being released, but rather the week that we are recording this podcast.
Time travel.
Yeah. So at this point, you'll have already been on for a few weeks.
That's true. Yeah.
And you're doing a great job.
Oh, yeah. So good. Oh,
cool.
So
thanks, guys. I can't believe I killed the entire other cast members.
I know, right?
So weird.
Just me and Gaurav. And then also, like Megan said, you can find Experience Pointers on Twitter at @exppointerspod. And send us your questions, send us your feedback. If we get some interesting questions from listeners, we would love to talk about those maybe in some future episodes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you have some questions or some ideas for future discussion points that we could talk about as they relate to GMing and tabletop gaming, we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, yeah, and please, if you like what you hear, please subscribe. Please, what is the word I'm looking for? Please rate us. Yes, yeah. Rate us. That is very helpful. It helps us move up on the charts so that other people can find us. Mm-hmm. That would be great.
So yeah. Mm-hmm. Or just share links on social media. We appreciate that too. Yeah.
And we joked a lot about it earlier, but I want to be very serious. Please do send us your dogs. I would love to see them. And just go on and send them
pictures over. Of dogs or the actual dogs?
It's whatever they choose, I think.
Whatever. Cats, though. Cats, too. Cats?
Yeah, just poke holes, please, in if you're going to send.
Yeah.
It depends on how you feel about your dog.
Poke holes in the dogs? Oh. Gross.
You know what I mean. You know what I mean.
No poking holes in dogs, please.
And send cats if you are ambivalent.
Cats. No, just, like, cats are great.
Right, but cats. Earlier we full-on established if they felt neutral about the issue, send us their cats.
If you
cats.
Love me, send cats.
Okay.
Okay, that's us signing off. Bark, bark, woof.
Meow.
That is not a thing we're going to do. That is not something we're hanging on to. That's not...
Wait, Dom, where are you going? Come back.
Dom, no!
Divide by 12.
Oh, our pay.